Welcome to Midpoint Monday on 88.5 FM and WMNF.org. I'm Sean Canan. On Saturday, the U.S. Senate voted to acquit former President Trump after a short impeachment trial. Both Florida Senators Marco Rubio and Rick Scott voted to acquit Trump. Today on the show, we're going to hear parts of the closing arguments. I'd also like to know what you think. Last week, we didn't really get much time for phone calls. But today, we will open up to you early on in the show, so call in now to get in the queue. Here's the number, 813-239-9663. You can also email dj at wmnf.org, or if you'd like to text, 813-433-0885. Please put your name on the text. So we're going to begin with this speech that was critical of Trump, and it was given by Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. And it was shortly after McConnell voted to acquit Trump. So, Colin, I want to hear what you think about this speech. You may have heard a little bit of it on Democracy Now! Or on Radioactivity, but here is the full speech from Mitch McConnell, very critical of Trump, even though McConnell just voted to acquit. What do you think?
January 6th was a disgrace. American citizens attacked their own government. They used terrorism to try to stop a specific piece of domestic business they did not like. Fellow Americans beat and bloodied our own police. They stormed the Senate floor. They tried to hunt down the Speaker of the House. They built a gallows and chanted about murdering the Vice President. They did this because they'd been fed wild falsehoods by the most powerful man on earth. Because he was angry, he lost an election. Former President Trump's actions preceded the riot were a disgraceful, disgraceful dereliction of duty. The House accused the former president of, quote, incitement. That is a specific term from the criminal law. Let me just put that aside for a moment and reiterate something I said weeks ago. There's no question, none, that President Trump is practically and morally responsible for provoking the events of the day. No question about it. The people who stormed this building believed they were acting on the wishes and instructions of their president. And having that belief was a foreseeable consequence of the growing crescendo of false statements, conspiracy theories, and reckless hyperbole, which the defeated president kept shouting into the largest megaphone on planet Earth. The issue is not only the president's intemperate language on January 6th. It is not just his endorsement of remarks in which an associate urged, quote, trial by combat. It was also the entire manufactured atmosphere of looming catastrophe, the increasingly wild myths about a reverse landslide election that was somehow being stolen, some secret coup by our now president. Now, I defended the president's right to bring any complaints to our legal system. The legal system spoke. The Electoral College spoke. As I stood up and said clearly at that time, the election was settled. It was over. But that just really opened a new chapter of even wilder, and more unfounded claims. The leader of the free world cannot spend weeks thundering that shadowy forces are stealing our country and then feign surprise when people believe him and do reckless things. Now, sadly, many politicians sometimes make overheated comments or use metaphors. We saw that. That unhinged listeners might take literally. But that was different. That's different from what we saw. This was an intensifying crescendo of conspiracy theories orchestrated by an outgoing president who seemed determined to either overturn the voters' decision or else torch our institutions on the way out. The unconscionable behavior did not end when the violence actually began. Whatever our ex-president claims he thought might happen that day, whatever right reaction he says he meant to produce by that afternoon, we know he was watching the same live television as the rest of us. A mob was assaulting the Capitol in his name. These criminals were carrying his banners, hanging his flags, and screaming their loyalty to him. It was obvious that only President Trump could end this. He was the only one who could. Former aides publicly begged him to do so. Loyal allies frantically called the administration. The president did not act swiftly. He did not do his job. He didn't take steps so federal law could be faithfully executed and order restored. No. Instead, according to public reports, he watched television happily, as the chaos unfolded. He kept pressing his scheme to overturn the election. Now, even after it was clear to any reasonable observer that Vice President Pence was in serious danger, even as the mob, carrying Trump banners, was beating cops and breaching perimeters, the president sent a further tweet attacking his own vice president. Now, predictably and foreseeably, under the circumstances, members of the mob seemed to interpret this as a further inspiration to lawlessness and violence, not surprisingly. Later, even when the president did half-heartedly begin calling for peace, he didn't call right away for the riot to end. He did not tell the mob to depart until even later. And even then, with police officers bleeding and broken glass covering Capitol floors, he kept repeating election lies and praising the criminals. In recent weeks, our ex-president's associates have tried to use the 74 million Americans who voted to re-elect him as a kind of human shield against criticism. Using the 74 million who voted for him as a kind of human shield against criticism. Anyone who decries his awful behavior is accused of insulting millions of voters. That's an absurd deflection. 74 million Americans did not invade the Capitol. Hundreds of rioters did. 74 million Americans did not engineer the campaign of disinformation and rage that provoked it. One person did. Just one.
One person, he's referring to President Trump there. That's Senator Mitch McConnell speaking on the Senate floor Saturday evening after he voted to acquit former President Trump in the impeachment trial. But of course, you're hearing that he is very critical of Trump's actions. And so I want to know what you think about Mitch McConnell and his speech. We'll continue with it in just a second, but I want to give out the number again and remind you that you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. This is WMNF's Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan. It's 12:16 in the afternoon, and I'm going to read just a couple of quick texts that have come in and emails, and we'll get to Carlos is being patient on the phone. We're going to wait to get to the phones until after McConnell's speech, if you don't mind holding, Carlos. But Doug in Clearwater says, Mitch will never be able to give a speech that holds any merit. He should have voted to convict, especially since he knew that vote had held no value, says Doug in Clearwater. Dave in Gulfport, some GOP state Congress members are censuring their fellow members for voting to impeach Trump. How do we demand that McConnell be censured for speaking his full truth about Trump too? That's Dave's question. And then James in St. Pete writes, with regard to McConnell's speech, I can only say, Mitch, you're a disgrace for not voting to convict a guilty president twice. So those are some of the people who have been commenting, but I want to hear from you as well. 813-239-9663. You can email dj@wmnf.org. You can text 813-433-0885. Please sign your name. Later on, we're going to hear closing arguments from a Trump lawyer, and we'll also hear a rebuttal from Jamie Raskin, the lead impeachment manager on WMNF's Midpoint Monday. But let's continue to hear more of Senator Mitch McConnell's speech criticizing President Trump's actions on January 6th. He's said that the actions were terrorism, not Trump's, but the mob, and that practically and morally responsible for what happened on January 6th is President Trump.
I've made my view of this episode very plain. But our system of government gave the Senate a specific task. The Constitution gives us a particular role. This body is not invited to act as the nation's overarching moral tribunal. We're not free to work backward from whether the accused party might personally deserve some kind of punishment. Justice Joseph Story, our nation's first great constitutional scholar, as he explained nearly 200 years ago, the process of impeachment and conviction is a... Story explained this limited tool exists to, quote, secure the state against gross official misdemeanors, end quote. That is, to protect the country from government officers. If President Trump were still in office, I would have carefully considered whether the House managers proved their specific charge. By the strict criminal standard, the president's speech probably was not incitement. However, in the context of impeachment, the Senate might have decided this was acceptable shorthand for the reckless actions that preceded the riot. But in this case, the question is moot because former President Trump is constitutionally not eligible for conviction. Now, this is a close question, no doubt. Donald Trump was the president when the House voted, though not when the House chose to deliver the papers. Brilliant scholars argue both sides of this jurisdictional question. The text is legitimately ambiguous. I respect my colleagues who've reached either conclusion. But after intense reflection, I believe the best constitutional reading shows that Article 2, Section 4 exhausts the set of persons who can legitimately be impeached, tried, or convicted. It's the president, it's the vice president, and civil officers. We have no power to convict and disqualify a former office holder who is now a private citizen. Here is Article 2, Section 4. Quote, the president, the vice president, and all civil officers of the United States shall be removed from office on impeachment for and conviction of treason, bribery, or other high crimes and misdemeanors, end quote. Now, everyone basically agrees that the second half of that sentence exhausts the legitimate grounds for conviction. The debates around the Constitution's framing make that abundantly clear. Congress cannot convict for reasons besides those. It therefore follows that the list of persons in that same sentence is also exhausted. There's no reason why one list would be exhaustive, but the other would not. Article 2, Section 4 must limit both why impeachment and conviction can occur and to whom. And to whom. If this provision does not limit impeachment and conviction powers, then it has no limits at all. The House has sole power of impeachment, and the Senate's sole power to try all impeachments would create an unlimited circular logic empowering Congress to ban any private citizen from federal office.
Well, we'll continue with this in a moment, perhaps. That's Mitch McConnell. He's a Senate Minority Leader, and he spoke Saturday evening. After he voted to acquit former President Trump in the impeachment trial, he laid out the reasons why he thinks that Trump was responsible, but now he's saying the reasons why it's not the Senate's place to vote to convict him. And of course, earlier in the week, the Senate had voted, and the majority said that there was the constitutionality to convict Trump if he was found guilty. So what do you think? 813-239-9663. You're listening to WMNF Tampa, 88.5 FM. This is Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan. It's 12:24 in the afternoon. We're taking your calls. We have a bunch of people on the line, but there is still an open line. 813-239-9663. I'll read some emails. I'll go to the phones. We may go back to Senator McConnell, or we may move on and hear from the closing arguments from Trump lawyer Michael Vanderveen, and also Jamie Raskin, the lead House impeachment manager, Democratic congressmember from Maryland. They have had some things to say on Saturday, that is, right before the vote happened. This speech that you're hearing now happened right after the vote, and people were thinking, well, based on a lot of what McConnell was saying, why didn't he vote to convict? And you're hearing his constitutional arguments, why not? All right, well, let's start out by going, Carlos has been holding in on the long time, so why don't we hear from Carlos? One second. All right, sorry, I had to switch computers. Carlos, you're on the air now.
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, the speech basically was about nothing. I mean, it's nothing. I don't know why. Personally, I don't know why the people surprised. I called before the whole thing started and I said, look, it's not going to be convicted. It's easy. If it's up to McConnell, they will return the slavery system back the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century and enslave people all over again. I mean, come on. We all know nothing is going to happen. It is how the system is made and how, I will say, at least 50% absorb the ideology to believe that something that doesn't exist, they believe it. That's the ideology, you know what I mean? And you know, the most important thing is that, hey, what is healthcare? We're in the middle of an epidemic, you know what I mean? What is the healthcare system that we should have? What is the education system that we should have? You know what I mean?
And I think that that's one of the reasons why on Saturday, some of the senators just wanted to get the vote over with and get moving with the legislative agenda, even though, I should say, they're on vacation this week. But they want to get the COVID-19 relief bill passed and so on. So, Carlos, why do you think McConnell, if he believes all the things you're saying, which, you know, I'm not saying that he doesn't, but why would he make this speech that was so critical of essentially of the leader of his party?
Well, hey, just number one, to the media, to the public, and it's like they are those die-hard Republicans, that there is no way on this earth that you will say otherwise, because as I said, it is an ideology. You can include the media, you know, the corporate media, that the, you know, Fox News, and there is many, many of them now, and with the internet, online, and hey, I have been in this country for 35 years, and since I came here, we are going to have a public health care system just like Europe, an educational system. 35 years went by, and I'm 1,000,000%. That 100 million will go by, and nothing will happen, because the ideology in this country is extremely dangerous, is a brainwash. When you get 50% of the population, they believe that the election was stolen, and they don't have not 1% to prove it, not even 1%. No one can bring 1% to said, and you get 50% believe in it. Wow, we have a serious problem, sir. And thank you.
Thank you, Carlos. Thanks for calling in. Let's go now to Margaret in Tampa. Margaret, you're on the air. What would you like to say?
Yes, thank you. I just want to say, McConnell, that just was hypocritical political theater. He's trying to play both sides of the aisle. And remember now, he's the one that wanted to make President Obama a first-term president. He would not agree with anything President Obama tried to pass. And also, he was with Trump for 4 years. And he didn't go against him. He went with him. And so I don't look at what the person say. Yes, he's making his thing sound because he's trying to put himself in a position to be able to look back on that and say, yes, I supported the president. I did what was right, which is not right. And if he believes that the president is wrong, he should have convicted the president. And he is the one that delayed the trial when the Democrats wanted to go ahead before Trump got out of office. It was McConnell. So don't fall for his hokey, though. He is a hypocritical political theater person, and that's what he is putting forth to the people.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much for that call, Margaret. Yeah, it's a good point, especially about, the argument that Senator Marco Rubio made kind of in a question where he said, could we just lock her up? And that McConnell just made, that you just heard him make, where he said this could make any private citizen subject to impeachment. Well, it's kind of a false argument because Trump was impeached when he was president. And yes, there was a short delay in between there and the time of the trial. And McConnell was somewhat responsible for that part of that delay. And now Trump is a private citizen. But, I think that Margaret made a good point about he was in part responsible for that delay. We're going to go back to the phones in just a second. Let me read some of these messages. From the 863 area code, Dwayne in Bartow says, Mitch McConnell is a spineless ne'er-do-well that needs to be put out to pasture and be made to write sentences on the blackboard saying, I will never listen to Trump again. Also, this is from the 813 area code. In showing the traitor state of mind, they left out his envious statements when adversaries' leaders gained extended terms. When China's leader was elected for life, he said, maybe we can do that here. I guess he's talking about Trump saying that. And then Patrick writes, Mitch should be sent off to pasture. He's so full of feces. He's disgusting. Not sure what his motive is. This is so strange, says Karen in Dunedin. All right. So those are some of the emails that have come in. There are a lot more I need to read in a bit. But let's go right now to Pat in Plant City. Hi, Pat. You're on the air.
Yeah. Hey, I have a few just general statements about history to say. One is that great empires end after people no longer trust their legislature. That's a pattern in history that we see. Mitch McConnell's statements are an expression of the immaturity level that exists in our civilization. And
the nature of a childish person is they're conflicted. They say one thing yet do another. Now, in his mind, he thinks he's operating at the highest level possible, and he's correct. But the problem is he's immature in that he only acts on his ideology and his conscience separate, right? They're not integrated. So he's not mature. There was a book about this called The Lord of the Flies that came out after the 19, you know, people realized what happened in Germany. And so we're just at a point where the immaturity level of our society is so grotesque that it is collapsing civilization. People lose their trust in the rule of law. And the next phase will be economic collapse followed by a war. And I hate to ruin everybody's day, but we're participating in this by our own ideologies and beliefs that politicians are going to solve our problem.
All right. Thank you, Pat. Thanks for calling in. Appreciate that. 813-239-9663. If you'd like to join the conversation, I'm going to take one more phone call before we go back to some more audio. We'll hear some more from that day. But Brent in Sarasota wants to say something. The rest of you, John, Mike, Fred, just hang on a bit. We'll be back to the phone lines maybe in 5 or 10 minutes. But Brent, what would you like to say?
Essentially, the Republican Party, a majority of them, have empowered, enabled Donald Trump from the beginning. He should have been impeached the first go-around when he attempted to extort Ukraine when the Russians were essentially on their border. And the Republicans rolled over and let him stay. The Republicans have created a Frankenstein monster, and now they have to live with him, which is dividing the Republican Party. It's tragic. We have a president who has tendencies towards despotism, fascism, and the Republican Party, shockingly, at least 43 of them have enabled that. So that's what we have, the new mammal discovered on Earth. It's a new mammal that's spineless, without a vertebra, and that's the Republican Party. And it's tragic. It's tragic for our country. And who would ever know that when a president encourages and supports an insurrection that invades our very capital, that the majority of the of one party would support it. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much, Brent, for calling in. And again, you can call in 813-239-9663. This is an email that says from Linda. It says, "Hi, Sean. So does this mean he can be sued in civil court like his attorneys and Mitch has said because it wasn't constitutional? So then they say that he can't because he was still in office as president in federal office on federal land when he committed murder, insurrection, sedition, just to name a few," says Linda, "but he's guilty and free. How convenient. I'm so disgusted." And that's a point, Linda, that, yeah, we'll probably talk about a little bit more later in the show, but there was an AP story that came out yesterday about how, as a private citizen, Trump is now stripped of his protection from legal liability that the presidency gave him, but he's still, as Mitch McConnell said, he's still liable for everything he did while he was in office as an ordinary citizen, unless the statute of limitations has run. So there's things like the Manhattan hush money payments and business deals. He may be tried in Manhattan court. Also, Georgia is looking at the funny business when he called the Secretary of State and so on. So yeah, we'll talk about more about that as we go on. But what I'm going to do now is turn to the lead impeachment manager, Jamie Raskin. He's a Democratic Congress member from Maryland, and he rebutted after the defense gave its closing arguments and after the prosecution gave its closing arguments. Raskin rebutted Michael Vanderveen's closing argument, which you might not hear now. We might play a little bit of it later, but I just want you to hear Raskin's rebuttal. So if you're a little bit familiar with what happened on Saturday, here's what Jamie Raskin said. Again, you're listening to 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa. This is Midpoint Monday. I'm Sean Canaan. It's 12:35 in the afternoon. We will take your calls after we hear from Jamie Raskin, the lead impeachment manager.
In an extraordinary and perhaps unprecedented act of self-restraint on my part, I will resist the opportunity to rebut every single false and illogical thing that you just heard, and I am going to be able to return to you, you know, perhaps 22 or 23 minutes. Few points. One, we have definitely made some progress in the last few days, because a few days ago, the president's team, although I think it was perhaps a member who has since left the team, lectured us that this was not an insurrection and said that the impeachment managers were outrageous in using the word insurrection. Today, counsel in his closing statement said it was a violent insurrection, and he denounced it. And I would certainly love to see President Trump also call it a violent insurrection and denounce it too. And I believe, although I don't have a verbatim text, that counsel called for long sentences for the people who were involved. Again, I would love to hear that come from the president as well. The distinguished counsel complains that there's no precedent with a developed body of law that the Senate has for impeaching and convicting a president who incites violent insurrection against the Congress and the government of the United States. Well, I suppose that's true because it never occurred to any other president of the United States, from George Washington to John Adams to Thomas Jefferson to James Madison to James Monroe to Abraham Lincoln to Ronald Reagan to George W. Bush to Barack Obama, to incite a violent insurrection against the Union. You're right, we've got no precedent for that. And so they think that that somehow is a mark in their favor. That's a score for them, that this Senate has to be the first one to define incitement of violent insurrection against the Union. And so the gentleman puts it on me. He says, inciting a president for committing incitement to violent insurrection against the Union is the new Raskin Doctrine. We've tried to convince him that there are well-known principles and elements of incitement, which we have talked to you about ad nauseum, and that this is an intrinsically, inherently fact-based judgment. But if that is the Raskin Doctrine, that a president of the United States cannot incite violent insurrection against the Union and the Congress, then I embrace it, and I take it as an honor. Most law professors never even get a doctrine named after them. So I will accept that. And finally, the counsel goes back to Julian Bond's case, because I think in the final analysis, their best argument, as pathetically weak as it is really about the First Amendment. But remember, they keep talking about stifling President Trump's speech. Someone told me when his speech has ever been stifled. He says exactly what he wants, whenever he wants. If and when you convict him for incitement of insurrection, he will continue to say whatever he wants on that day. Remember, they referred yesterday to interference with his liberty, which I found absolutely bizarre, because everybody knows that he will not spend 1 minute in prison or jail from conviction on these charges. It is a civil remedy to protect all of us, to protect the entire country, our children, our Constitution, our future. That's what impeachment, trial, conviction are all about. Julian Bond. See, I knew Julian Bond, so forgive me. Most people say, don't even respond to this. I've got to respond to this, okay? Julian Bond was a civil rights activist who decided to go into politics, like the people in this room, like all of us who are in politics. And they tried to keep him out. He was a member of SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, which really launched the voting rights movement in America. It's a great story that Bob Moses tells in his book called Radical Equations about, you know, he was a graduate student in mathematics at Harvard, and he went down to Mississippi. You know why? Because he saw a picture in the New York Times of black civil rights protesters, college students, I think in North Carolina, AT&T, and he saw a picture of them on the cover of the New York Times, and they were sitting in at a lunch counter. And he looked at the picture and he said, they looked the way that I felt. They looked the way that I felt. And he said he had to go down south to Mississippi. And they launched the voting rights movement. That's where the phrase one person, one vote comes from. It was not invented by the Supreme Court. They would go door to door to try to register people to vote. But anyway, Julian Bond was part of that movement. The Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. Nonviolence. It was the end and it was the means. Nonviolence. And he ran for the state legislature in Georgia, a path other civil rights activists followed, like our great, late, beloved colleague John Lewis, who's in our hearts today. And when he got elected, They wanted to try to keep him from being sworn into the Georgia legislature. And so they said, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee has taken a position against the Vietnam War. You're a member of SNCC. We're not going to admit you because you took a position against the Vietnam War. And the Supreme Court, in its wisdom, said you cannot prevent someone from swearing an oath to become a member of a legislative body because of a position that they took or a group they were a part of took before they got sworn in. That's the exact opposite of Donald Trump. He got elected to office. He swore an oath to the Constitution to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. He served as president for 4 years right up until the end when he wanted to exercise his rights under the imaginary January exception, and he incited a violent mob and insurrection to come up here, and we all know what happened. He is being impeached and convicted for violating his oath of office that he took. He's not being prevented from taking his oath in the first place. The First Amendment's on our side. He tried to overturn the will of the people, the voice of the people. He lost that election by more than 7 million votes. Some people don't want to admit it. Counsel for the president could not bring themselves to admit that the election's over. In answer to the question from the distinguished gentleman from Vermont, he refused to answer that. He said it was irrelevant. Despite all of the evidence you've heard about the big lie and how that set the stage for his incitement of the insurrectionary violence against us. First Amendment is on our side. We are defending the Bill of Rights. We are defending the constitutional structure. We are defending the separation of powers. We're defending the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House against a president who acted no better than a marauder and a member of that mob by inciting those people to come here. And in many ways, he was worse. He named the date, he named the time, and he brought them here, and now he must pay the price. Thank you, Mr. President.
That's lead impeachment manager Jamie Raskin speaking on Saturday. He's a Democratic congressmember from Maryland. He was rebutting the closing arguments by the Trump lawyer. Moments later, 57 senators, including 7 Republicans, voted guilty. 43 Republican senators voted not guilty, including the 2 Florida senators. Trump was acquitted because that was 10 guilty votes short of the 2/3 of the Senate necessary to convict. What do you think about Raskin's closing there, his rebuttal? 813-239-9663. You can text 813-433-0885 or email dj@wmnf.org. There's still an open line, but we do have some people that we're going to go to the phones right now. We're going to go in just a second to Fred, but let me read a couple of these emails that have come in. Gary Gibbons writes, Mitch McConnell made the speech for GOP corporate donors who had pulled their support after the attack on the Capitol. He's hoping that corporate donors will once again turn on the spigot of dark money after showing some sense of outrage. It was such a crocodile tears moment for Mitch that I had to turn it off when he was speaking on Saturday. So thanks for that comment, Gary. And we'll go now to Fred in Plant City. Fred, you're on the air. What would you like to say?
Oh, that your email just said what I was going to say, that McConnell had to make that speech to get back in the good graces of the corporate donors who have threatened to remove their donations to the Republican Party. So that email was saying exactly what I was going to say.
All right, great. Thanks so much, Fred. I appreciate you calling.
Thank you.
813-239-9663. Let's see. John in Lutz has been holding a while. Hi, John.
Hello, Sean. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Well, while I'm disappointed, obviously, with the result of the impeachment trial, I have to, you know, continue to look forward to the fact that, the Congress is the legislative body. They really don't do a good job of upholding the law. I look forward to the judicial branch, like the Department of Justice, filing charges against Trump and really putting him on trial and hopefully convicting him and sentencing him and putting him in prison. That's what I'm really looking forward to. I want to see a thorough investigation, lots of witness testimony, and because he tried to overthrow our country, and something must be done about that, or we have no law, we have no constitution at all.
All right. Thanks so much for making that point, John. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we're going to go to one more phone call right now. We'll go to Mike and Brandon and Chris and Dave. Just hold on. We'll come back to you in just a minute. But Mike, what's on your mind?
Hey, to me, Mitch McConnell is like the mad genius. You know, he has to walk the tightrope where he has to try to take his party that he's affiliated with, the fragmented party, and somehow keep it together. Once again, thank you, thank you, thank you, all the voters out there who cast the vote and got Biden in there. Because the key thing that he said was, had Trump won, maybe he would have considered convicting him. Now, granted, we wouldn't have had this incident occur. Because remember, Trump said, hey, everything's fine as long as I win. And that's always been the position that he took, that there won't be any irregularities, there won't be any issues as long as I win. The other guy wins, then we got all types of issues. But that's the key takeaway from that speech, is he might have convicted him. And thank God the voters throughout the country got rid of this sociopath, and now it'll go into the criminal court system, and we'll see how that goes. But once again, thank you very much, voters.
All right, Mike, thanks for that call. 813-239-9663. If you'd like to call in, you can also email dj@wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885. We're going to read a couple of emails before we go back to the phone lines. Jeff in Tampa says, Margaret makes an excellent point. Thanks for all you do. So thank you for that email for Jeff. And Tom in St. Pete says, Mitch said the proper course is by criminal prosecution. The closing segment on 60 Minutes last night mentioned criminally prosecuting Trump in Georgia for pressuring Raffensperger. So fingers crossed. By the way, McConnell is a son of a Mitch, says Tom in St. Pete. And Barbara says, I think McConnell was sending the message that loyalty to the party is more important than one's commitment to right and wrong. Also, JoJo and Mike from Arcadia says, my partner says McConnell's wife resigned after January 6th out of fear. Maybe he's playing both sides to reduce chance of death threats, walking a tightrope. Love your shows. So thank you to JoJo and Mike from Arcadia for that. That's right. Elaine Chao, the Secretary of Transportation, is McConnell's wife, and she did resign after the insurrection on January 6th. If you'd like to participate in this show, we're talking about the verdict, the acquittal, that is, of Donald Trump on Saturday in his second impeachment trial. You can give us a call at 813-239-9663. It's 12:49 in the afternoon. My name is Sean Canaan. I'm the host of Midpoint Monday here on WMNF Tampa. We'll go now to Chris in Sarasota. Hi, Chris. Thanks for holding. What would you like to say?
Thank you. Nobody has ever brought up the thing that the word patriot, which has been brought up a whole lot. Trump called them all the time. You take away the PAT, and what do you have? Riot. It's giving them a free rein to go riot every time he calls them patriots.
This was...
So that's about... Huh?
That does kind of describe what happened, exactly.
Yeah. Every time I hear that, I think, oh, here we go. Thank you. That's all I have to say.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Chris. 813-239-9663. All right, Dave in Tampa. Dave, what would you like to say?
Hey, Sean. I think the impeachment prosecutors missed an opportunity, and I think the Democrats missed it right along with them. That was never, to treat the Senate as a jury was an absurdity from the beginning. That acquittal was a foregone conclusion. And I think instead of spending the week showing the video was good, but going after Trump, that had to happen. But you should have lumped the Republican senators right in there with him. And they should have called him out by name. They should have pointed to people like Josh Hawley while they were sitting in there reading a book, and just completely uprooted and overturned all the typical Senate decorum and gone heavily on the offensive and attacked those senators as cowards and co-conspirators, and lay down a whole lot of video for generations to come of real fire and brimstone attack on those people, that you're either a patriot, you're either going to defend the Constitution, or you're too cowardly, or you're conspiring against it, and laid it out in those terms. Instead, those senators like Rick Scott and Rubio, they got a real pass in all of that. The Democrats really ought to make it all about that. You're either going to defend our Constitution, you have the courage to do it, or you're a coward, or you're a co-conspirator. And those are the only options. And it should have been said on the Senate floor to the point where that old man Lee broke his gavel, trying to gavel it down, and just completely destroy the decorum. Because if you're going to let rioters come in there and not do anything about that, then why should we have decorum in the middle of an impeachment trial? It was a spectacle, and I think the Democrats missed their chance to manipulate it to their own advantage and to the advantage of the entire country.
All right, Dave, thanks for those thoughts. I appreciate you calling in. And if you'd like to call in, we do have an open line now. It's 813-239-9663. You can email dj at wmnf.org. I'm less likely to get your email, though, because I'm a little bit behind on emails. But if you want to call in, it's 813-239-9663. You can text 813-433-0885. Let's go now. Let me read one text here before we go to Camellia. And this text is from Jerome. It says, Mitch is such a liar, he can't convict because Trump is out of office. Does that mean if Trump's mob had been successful and Trump stayed in office, would Mitch bring articles of impeachment himself? No, he wouldn't. He's a cowardly liar, says Jerome. Thanks for that. And then Camellia, you're on the air. What would you like to say?
Hi, Sean. I have been saying, I said all along, when the whole, election thing got started, I said, if he loses, he's going to burn it down on the way out. He's going to burn it all down. He's going to destroy everything this country is about. And, I was completely right. And, I kept saying, January 6th, there's going to be a riot. Something bad's going to happen. And I knew, and so did half the, so did most of the people in the country. It was no surprise. What is surprising to me, it's not surprising to me, but, the Republicans had a real opportunity to set a precedent and to literally make history by, if they would have said, that this kind of behavior is not acceptable. And if they would have convicted him, they would have set a precedent for all time, disallowing the kind of behavior that Trump's exhibited from day one. I've always said, our elected officials, especially our president, should be held to the highest standard, especially in their speech. And Trump's lawyers basically said, oh, no, elected officials pretty much get a free pass. They have more freedom of speech than a regular citizen, which is insanity to me. The Republicans had a huge chance and they blew it. And my fear is that because of all this brainwashing that's gone on, God forbid the Republicans take back control of the House and the Senate, we're all in big trouble, because if Trump gets back in, this country is gone. He'll never leave office. And that is a very frightening thing, a very frightening thing.
All right. Thanks, Camellia. Yeah, good point. I mean, Trump has seen what it looks like to lose. What if he does win again? You might be right. All right. Thanks for that call. I appreciate that. We have a couple people on the line. Just hold on a second. I'll get to you in just a second. But you can call in 813-239-9663 if you'd like to join the conversation. Simon writes, the Senate votes for witnesses and has the majority only to renegotiate no witnesses, as Trump's attorneys would have called Nancy Pelosi as a witness to the security issue at the Capitol. So that's what Simon says out there in cyberspace. And Dave writes, while Trump was in office, Mitch refused the articles of impeachment from the House managers. His excuse was that they had to help with the inauguration or some BS. That's the crux of the entire matter with McConnell. So that's Dave's opinion out there. We'll go back to the phone lines. We have about 5 or 6 minutes left in the show. You're still welcome to call in 813-239-9663. Tim in Tampa, you're on the air. Hi, Tim.
Hey, how you doing? I'd just like to say I would really love for this country to start making people accountable, especially these politicians. At some point in Trump's life, he's got to be held and made accountable for his behavior, his actions, from his business deals to you name it. The guy has never been forced to be held accountable. And again, Trump is not going away because his mentality, the guy is warped. And the only way we can keep this country level is we have to start making these politicians, the McConnells, the all these guys up there, knew this guy led that insurrection for, just been going on for almost 2 years. He's been grooming this thing. And all of a sudden, now we're going to let him do it criminally. As soon as they start to process him, try to prosecute him criminally, they're going to say, well, he was a sitting president, and you can't do that while he was a sitting president. This is a joke. You got to make these people accountable. That's all I wanted to say.
All right, Tim, thanks for the call. 813-239-9663. If you'd like to join the conversation, this email comes in from the 863 area code on text. This was the Dems' dream. They had a chance and blew it. Now the Republicans need to go after the insiders like Maxine Waters, who do the same Republicans, Nancy, I think he means the same as Republicans, he or she, Nancy Pelosi as well, for her hate speech. They are all pot calling the kettle black. So that's someone out there who says that Maxine Waters has essentially caused incitement of a riot to attempt to overthrow the U.S. government. I don't remember that, but 863 is suggesting that, and that Nancy Pelosi has hate speech. So you can respond to that if you'd like. Thanks for that text. 863 did not sign who that was from. We'll go now to Pam in Punta Gorda. Hi, Pam. Thanks for calling.
Yes, hi. Yeah, you know, I totally agree with everyone in the fact that McConnell just was covering his rear end and took a stand like the other. I am more in favor of the Republicans that did, charge him with guilty, but the others are just dragging their ass. But on the other hand, I'm sorry for that.
I'll forgive you. Go ahead.
How come the public has not, in all the years that the Democrats, the Clinton, the this one, the that one, have gotten away with nothing and nobody brought them to trial and they're not in prison for what they've confiscated? And on the other hand, then we have the fact that, you know, that he's being crucified for everything the Democrats done over these past few years. So that's all I have to say. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much, Pam. We appreciate your call. And we'll go now to Fonda in Brandon. Hi, Fonda. Thanks for calling.
Hello there. I had read a few weeks ago that it was possible that then President Trump could give himself and his family members pocket pardons. So he might have that in his pocket.
I don't think he can do anything afterwards, but I don't know if some sort of secret.
He was still president.
Okay, I see what you're saying. And then we just didn't hear about it? Is that what you mean?
Well, I read that a pocket pardon does not have to be made public.
Okay,
I'm sorry I can't name the source. It was in the news.
I'll have to look into it. I appreciate you bringing that up. I'll definitely look into that. Thanks, Fonda.
Thank you. Bye.
Good to hear from you. I don't want to squeeze in one more call. We don't really have time. Actually, let me see if I can get Andrew on the air. Andrew has been holding. Andrew, can you make it about 10 seconds? Can you make your point?
Yeah. My question is, since Rubio and Scott voted and they're Floridian Republicans, I have heard nothing about trying to get rid of Rubio, and I don't know, he must have done it because he feels he has a strong base. What can we do about that? That's a rhetorical question.
All right, thank you for that rhetorical question. I appreciate you making that call. That, of course, obviously the non-rhetorical answer would be, you can vote in or out any politician you want, and Rubio is up for election very soon. Thanks so much to everyone who called. We got about 26 people on the air. That was great. Thanks to Frank Knox, Alvaro Montealegre. I'm Sean Canaan. This has been Midpoint Monday, and tomorrow at noon, your hero, Mark Bureau, will host Midpoint Tuesday. Stay tuned right now for Latino 54. That's coming up after NPR headlines on WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, and Lakeland. Thanks so much for listening. I'm glad you joined me on the show today. Have a great day.